Blog Talk Radio.
I've been here for as long as I remember, running through the plains of civilized Ethiopia. Way back then, we used to call it Abyssinia, played by the Nile River, me and my brothers. I came via vessel called my mother. We spoke mentally, then she conceived me immaculately. My father is Osiris, and we took trips to Sirius. Stopped on Mars, where we built a few pyramids. Came back home, I knew it wouldn't be long before the invasion began, so we wrote it in stone. Me and Mello took a quick trip to Asia, scoped the place out before they called it Minor Major. Built a few temples to praise we, the Buddha. The people called us Nagas, symbolic of the dragon. I've been to places you can't even imagine. Put the jupe in Jupiter, put the rings around Saturn. Carved out the rocks for that Stonehenge pattern. We played with the stars before we started playing Madden. Do you remember? Can you recall? Cause if you think you were a slave, you can't remember at all. I said, Joe, do you remember? Can you recall?
What I does, ALD, think of me to your heart, here's a buzz, here's a buzz. Welcome to Afronauts Radio. I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. Hello.
Hello, thanks.
Hi.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. So I have Lisa K. Weber on the line, and I just want to make sure I pronounce it right. Linley Forrest?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. So we have the Ladies of Hex. There are three of you.
Yeah, we're waiting for Kelly Sue. Kelly? She said she's having problems with her headset microphone.
Ah, okay, okay. All right. So, Linley, so we have the Ladies of Hex on our show today, which is such an honor. I really appreciate you giving us the privilege of being able to interview and talk about Hex 11 on our radio show. So, again, thank you and welcome.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, Hex 11. I actually met you and my partner, the Bunny. We met you at 2016. We were actually at David Walker's table, and
he
got to meet these ladies. And this comic is awesome, and I consider David Walker a very smart guy and a friend, mm-hmm. Definitely a friend to the show. So we picked up your book, and yeah, we love it. So. Thanks again.
Wonderful.
I see that Kelly Sue is on the line as well. Welcome, Kelly.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, there she is.
Yay!
Great.
I definitely was not sweating just now.
Goodness.
No, well, just as we were talking about David Walker.
Oh, yeah. I love him dearly.
We're such big fans. Yeah. And he's been so, so kind and generous with us. He's to have a veteran like that in the industry take time to share his knowledge, his depth of knowledge, has been invaluable. He's an incredible dude.
Yeah,
definitely. Big up and shout out to David Walker. I believe from Instagram and Facebook, he's in Philly, maybe at a con or something out there. I know.
It looks like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know he'll be at New York Comic Con, which Afronauts Radio will be there in a few weeks. So we'll definitely be looking forward to that.
Awesome. That's a great con. We won't be there this year, but that's a great con.
Really, this is our first year going. I'm from New York, and this is my first year going to New York Comic Con.
Wow.
It is intense. It's big and full.
Yeah.
But it's a very good show.
Definitely. I would recommend using the restroom before you get inside the convention center.
Well, they had lots of stalls for men. It was just the ladies' restrooms that were the problem. Never
ladies
in my life have
to go
I...
to convention centers.
No, never have I ever experienced anything quite like the bathroom situation for women at the Javits Center, man. It was
I will pass that on to the bunny so she's aware of that.
She
may not
want
to cosplay anything
jokes.
That's too difficult to get out of there.
No, you need to go to the bathroom 45 minutes before you actually need to pee. Yeah,
that's the way
you
got to
really think ahead, you know.
Right. Okay.
But it's
yeah.
a great show, man.
Is it cool? I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, we have a pretty good lineup. We're fortunate to have press passes this year, so we're looking forward to American Gods and Doctor Who, and
wait.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Awesome.
So on to your project, Hex 11.
Mm-hmm.
We've read this. I read it like. In 2016, but like you ladies were coming on the show, so I was like, hey, let's read this again. And I was like, oh, when's the next one coming out? And then I saw that you are wrapping up volume two.
We
finished volume two.
Yeah, and it is out currently, so you can certainly get hard copies through our website or whenever we're at shows, and you can download digital copies of it from our website or also from Comixology. And then we just are getting started on volume three right now. So issue 13 should hopefully be out by the end of the year if everything goes according to plan.
Yes.
Awesome. So just to for those who may not know, can we get a brief explanation of Hex 11, the concept of the story and kind of where we are well, don't give me any spoilers because I haven't gotten volume two yet. where we are.
Spoilers. Yeah, well, the general, our general pitch is we say it's Harry Potter meets Blade Runner. And the deal is Eleanor. She is our hero. She is a young witch in training, and she's living in this world where magic has recently been discovered like it's a new technology. So it's this new, very powerful resource. And where magic used to just be in the realm of those who were kind of born with it, and it was handed down quietly generation to generation. Now the powers that be that run this world, so to speak, their scientists have figured out enough about what makes magic possible that they've harnessed it and commodified it. So now if you've got money, you can buy access to magical abilities, sort of like we download apps. So it's made things very tense for the naturals, like Eleanor and her kind, and they have been sent to living in this huge slum outside the city called the Hex. And that's where the story begins.
Excellent.
So there's we've got a class war that's kind of brewing. We obviously have a situation where, you've got a corporatocracy is what we call it, who really want to control this newfound, very powerful resource. And then you've got people who are inherent access to it. And so we've got obviously an oppressive scenario going on here. And then you've got a hero who it's kind of both. She walks into it, but she also kind of has it thrust upon her that she's going to be the one to have to help the people find their way clear through this kind of mess.
Okay. So
how's that sound?
It sounds great. And like after reading it, I definitely see like the comparison Harry Potter meets Blade Runner, but it also seems much deeper than that. Like when you read it, it's like a lot going on there that, you know, so this is a show based on indigenous culture and indigenous futurism. We're sponsored by a nonprofit, United Nations Indigenous NGO. So we're very much into our native culture and indigenous cultures. And so having studied mysticism and magic, I found a lot of things very interesting in the book. First and foremost, the use of the ether. And then could you call it the Verge? The Verge where the demons live. And like, so found a lot of that very interesting. So the concept in itself, like where was that born from? Like, was that just your experience of reading fantasy and science fiction growing up, or did you have like a connection through it through Wiccan or like maybe whatever your core beliefs or experiences.
Lisa can certainly speak to that.
Yeah, I'll say to my end of it, it was definitely reading and engaging with fantasy and science fiction from the time I was a very small child. So I had the concept of this kind of futuristic magical world for many, many years. And I had this kind, I had the characters kind of set up and the world kind of got built in my head over the course of like maybe a decade of just kind of, you know, I had this basic concept of a world where magic existed like a new technology, like in the future, because I wanted to see that and I couldn't find it anywhere. then I, you know, I just kind of, to make the world kind of feel more real and more relatable, I kind of added wrinkles to it by just kind of paying attention to the world around me. And, you know, learning what I could about various, you know, difficult moments of history and kind of applying these kind of challenges to this world so that it could be something that was relevant to people. And
then I think Kelly Sue mm-hmm. can speak to the mysticism of some of this mm-hmm. as
yeah,
well,
absolutely.
Because when we
yeah.
added her to the triangle of, and when we actually, you know, the magic of Hex came together, she comes from a background of that as well. Of, you know, she's definitely, we call her our oracular spectacular for a reason.
Yeah, I have studied mysticism for a very long time. In my early 20s, I became a member of the Agape International Spiritual Center here in Los Angeles, which is kind of where my spiritual and metaphysical study began. I've been using tarot for a very long time, not just creatively, but also in life. It's a big part of what goes on at the Hex office, in front of and behind the scenes. And I've also, I also read astrology. So there has been that, there's been those kinds of things, which have kind of become these cool sort of cultural phenomenons now. But
right.
In addition to that, I've done a lot of, over the years, I've done a lot of shamanic healings and I've done a lot of work with connecting with ancestors and all of these sort of like deeper spiritual practices. I have a Native American background, and I have felt very called to that kind of almost communion with the spiritual and physical world, which has led me to things like tarot and to oracle cards and to the use of crystals and Palo Santo and sage and all of those things. And there's an unending amount of knowledge there that you can acquire. There's no end to how much you can learn about various spiritual practices across many cultures, and all of them are so
right.
Profound and powerful. And to be able to bring those and have them inform a creative endeavor like this that's so dedicated to diversity has really been one of the most rewarding aspects of working on this book, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, I could tell that there was definitely some background in mysticism to what you put in the book, because I'm, as a student of mysticism, as someone who is American indigenous and participated in certain ceremonies and practice, I could definitely tell that you were coming from a place of not just of experience as well as like, you know, knowledge, you know, surface.
Yeah.
Knowledge.
Well, that means a whole lot.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it definitely comes across. We've had Gloria Muriel on our show before, who is a muralist out of San Diego, and she does beautiful work. And we discuss, you know, where art comes from and how art is kind of like, art is magic because it from a place of nothing to a place of something, right? Like you're bringing it from the ether into existence when you create art. And
yeah, I absolutely absolutely, resonate with that. I've always kind of felt like when I'm making something that it's like kind of coming from somewhere larger than me. So,
We say oftentimes like we're making something out of nothing. You know, that phrase that we use a lot, you know.
Exactly. And then also, I love the concept of, you know, magic and technology and the mixture of magic and science because, you know, and the way I was raised in my traditions is that, you know, magic is basically science that's not understood by common people, right? So people don't understand it, so they call it magic, right? So they just don't know the actual law or equation to do it and be able to say this is scientific. So I resonated with that as well, definitely. So I want to, like, I thought this book was really awesome. I'm definitely looking forward to, like, more of it. and especially as women, because I think a lot of times, like, you know, the comic industry, entertainment industry, the mysticism or magic industry in itself is male dominated, right? So coming from someone who grew up from a matriarchal society, I appreciate the input and wisdom that you bring to the table. Definitely.
Well, thank you.
We think that's value.
We're happy to contribute.
Yeah, and there's so much value in that, and that's a huge tenet of what we're trying to build here, is that all voices are valuable. Everyone's perspective is unique and deserves a platform to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one owns or has, you know, exclusive rights to the channels in which we think and talk and feel and relate to the things that we experience in our realities. It's so essential that we communicate ourselves to others. That's how we connect. That's how we keep from going crazy. That's how we grow, and how, you know, both, you know, interpersonally and communally, it's essential. But there, for so long, for many reasons, not all of them just oppressive, you know, like outwardly oppressive, but just for lack of access or whatever reasons, it's just not been the case that everyone felt that they had a right to manifest their voice in a public way. But with modern technology and what's going on in the world today, we do have it. And there's no excuses anymore, you know? And it's time for us all to say what we're feeling and what we're thinking and what our perspectives on these things are. And not everyone has to dig it. You know, I'm not saying that. But everyone has a right to get out and say and to tell the story that they want to tell.
Right. I think that's the uniqueness of humanity, is that you have billions of people, and each person has their own unique signature. So that each person has their own unique story. And so why suppress that? Or, you know what I mean? Why suppress that? As a creator, as an artist, like, even as a consumer, right? We like a story. So why are we not listening to
everyone? Why are we just listening to one? I get so excited about that. I love people, and I love to hear their stories. And I just, the thought of that is, it's just exciting to me. Like, yeah, so what are you about? Like, tell me what you've gone through. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, we find that we're so much more alike than we are different, you know?
Yeah.
It's powerful. It's very powerful.
So tell me what it's like, you know, being your own boss now. So, I mean, you ladies came together, created this comic book, this company, and it's doing very well. So, I mean, you know, you had Lives before Hex 11, and now you have Hex 11. So what was it like transitioning? What was it like, you know, realizing that, like, you know, you're forging your own destiny? You were
I was just going to say that, like, for me, it wasn't like it was a transition for sure, but I mean, I've been a freelance illustrator for my entire professional life. There were times where I took, you know, part-time jobs, and even like a brief stint working full-time, but I always kept the freelance thing going because it was always my aim to be my own boss. I learned very early on in life that I'm not one of those people that can like go to an office and like work a regular job. So I had to organize my life in such a way to avoid doing that. So, you know, when it, but that, you know, that meant like, that meant just kind of like, you know, closing myself off into my workspace for most days all day. So for me, it was actually kind of a beautiful transition to start a business with two other partners, where we had this common goal that was a little larger than just making sure, like for me, to just making sure I had enough money to pay rent or whatever, to being this much larger goal that's like, oh, wow, we have this platform and we have this larger purpose now. And so that's what I have found the most rewarding since starting our own business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The collaboration's been really nice. I mean, we wouldn't, that we speak so much to it when people ask about it, because it took all three of us to come together for this thing to be successful. Like any one of us just wouldn't have been able to do this, but the three of us right. together came together in such a magical way, and our skills were very complementary, and it just, it kind of, like we talk about sometimes with good characters, they write themselves. This business has kind of done the same thing in a weird way. Mm. I mean, we set out to make issue one, and you know, we're now 12 issues in, and we're a full-blown publishing company, and you know, with been here 4 years. We make pretty good money. We are, we spend most of the time in the black, and we're, you know, now we can make decisions. We can decide what we want to do next. We can decide what we want to focus on. We've got people who are interested, and, you know, we're definitely a growing concern. So it's awesome. And I, like Lisa, I have had many jobs. I've had so many jobs. It makes it sound like I'm on the lam. It's weird. I have a problem generally with authority, so I don't do good long term in those jobs. I like temping right. because I didn't really have to care that much about it, or you know. But I definitely have always been an entrepreneurial. I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit, and
well, having a problem with authority, you did the right thing. You created your own. You wouldn't have to deal with that. So that's
exactly. And, yeah, it's like, yeah. And I think I don't. That's exactly. I love that we get to do what we want to do the way we want to do it. We don't have to ask anybody. It's just between the three of us, and we get together and talk about what our plans are, and we say, okay, let's do it. And then we go and do it. And it's great. I love it right. so much. Yeah. I love it. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Do you think Sally Sue has her end of this?
Yeah, I was
going
to say, I was like, I'm missing someone. So,
the transition to this, for me, has been, I mean, to say that it was like destined and fateful is certainly not hyperbolic. But I had experienced so much transition prior to coming on to this project. I had been an actor for 10 years. And it wasn't until getting towards the end of that experience where I was like, this really isn't making me happy. And I started realizing that my favorite part of acting was the, scene study and script analysis and character, like understanding characters and doing that kind of study. And I was like, I think that maybe I might be a writer. And around that time, I had started working at an ad agency, which is actually where I met Lindley's husband, Casey, who introduced me to the team. And I, you know, was like, I'm going to go get a real job. And so I got a real job, and I was like, wow, this is a bummer. I definitely don't fit in here. And so it was a similar thing where it was like, wow, this kind of like structural, quote unquote, the way it's always been done kind of vibe is really not for me. And so I started moonlighting and taking this writing course at UCLA for half hour television comedy. And I absolutely fell in love with it. And I had done two courses there. And then I had done a mock writer's room at the former Improv Olympic West, which was an absolute blast. And then by the time I had, finished that up, Casey Lindley's husband was calling me and saying, would you be interested in developing a comic book with my wife and our dear friend? And I had been a comic book fan for so many years, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do that. It was amazing to see how everything that I had just learned, all these years of studying story and studying scripts and, you know, all of that, I had no idea how much it was preparing me for this exact project and this experience creating with Lisa and Lindley. And so from there, it was like my life rearranged itself in a pretty magical way to make this possible. Mm-hmm. And that is how, that's what the transition has been like for me. So to have it been awesome. So successful is just kind of the cherry on top.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Lindley, so like you're the editor, publisher, and I saw in a, you know, in prepping for this, I saw a couple of your other interviews and I saw that, so you kind of met Lisa and you heard her story and you were like, this is a gem, like a diamond in the rough, like let's go. Is that kind of how it went? And then
well, kind of. I mean, Lisa and
guys,
I
go ahead.
No, just, no, Lisa and I have been friends for a long time. We both lived in New York at the same time and became friends there, and we're friends for about, I don't know, 8 years or so, 10 years or something like that, before she moved to Oakland. And I knew her art then, and I've always been a fan, and we've always been close friends. And then she moved away, and that was sad. But then just coincidentally, like, she moved to Oakland and was in Oakland for about 3 years, and then she just realized that Oakland wasn't her jam and that really LA is where she should have been. And so she moved to LA, and about 6 months after she moved to LA, my husband got offered a job out here, and we were looking to leave New York anyway. And so we're like, well, that's exciting. So we're moving to LA and Lisa's there too. So that's fun. We could get things back together again. And so, you know, we immediately started hanging out together again, which was great. And we had been talking a lot because my background, I have an arts background, but I spent most of my like kind of professional career in post-production and, IT kind of production technologies, consulting, and sales. And so I'm a solutions provider, and I go to businesses and say, here are your pain points and here are ways you can solve this problem. So I was talking to Lisa about her business as a professional illustrator, because we were having a conversation at the beginning of 2014 and that she was getting really burnt out. And, you know, you run into this problem oftentimes when you are a creator and you get paid for the things you create. You can only work as many hours in the day as you can create, you know, like you've got a limit to how much you can do. And, you know, it's not like they make $1 million billion or something. And then you've got a limit on how much you can raise your prices to where you quit getting work. So it's this weird, you know, it's like you kind of top out at not a very reasonable amount of money over the long haul. And so we were kind of looking for solutions of ways to solve this problem. And I said, well, if you could do anything with your talent, what would you do? And she said, I want to make a comic book. And I said, I don't understand that. Why? Not people read those? I'm not in the loop at all, you know? And she's like, oh, right. No, they totally do. And I was like, well, I mean, do you want to go work in the comic industry? Or are you saying you got an idea? She's like, no, I've got this idea I've been working on for like 10 years. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, well, then can you tell me about it? She's like, yeah. So she laid the whole, basically the world out, the storyline, the whole concept. And because I know her and I trust her and anything Lisa makes is phenomenal. I was like, whoa, okay. All right. This thing's got legs. This is actually a very interesting story. I really like it. Let's just put a little structure around it and see what we get. You know, she's drawn all the time anyway. It's like, what's it going to hurt? Let's just see what happens. And so we did, I said, you know, give me a breakdown of like the characters and write me kind of a synopsis and like, give me a worldview. So let's just see what we're dealing with as a whole and figure out kind of where we need to go from there. And we worked on that for about a month. We would meet, you know, biweekly or so. And then we realized we really need a writer. And that's when Casey, my husband, was like, oh my gosh, you've got to call Kelly Sue. She's incredible. She would be perfect for this. She's totally into all this nerd stuff. It'd be great. And so we did it. And it's funny because I'm into this nerd stuff too, but this is not the world I came from. I'm a musical theater person.
No, not at all. I can totally tell.
Yeah. You're a musical theater nerd, which musical theater nerds and, like, you know, sci-fi fantasy nerds, like, the Venn diagram is, like, there's not a lot of meeting.
Yeah.
A lot of overlap. But I love art. I love any kind of, you know, authentic self-expression. I love visual storytelling. You know, that's what theater is.
You're a latent nerd, Lindley.
I'm a latent nerd.
Because it was always there. You just wanted to bring it up.
It's totally true. I mean, once we all got together, they had to, like, bring me up to speed on so many things. Like, I had to watch Firefly. I had to watch all the Doctor Who's.
Got them both into D&D successfully.
Yes, played like D&D, which I love. You know, and once I got here, I was really glad to be here. I just hadn't been here before. But once Lisa and Kelly met, it was like kismet. I mean, they had the same influences, the same interests. I mean, it was weird. And so then it was go time. And from this, you know, from that moment moving forward, it's just been like the train on a track with nothing in its way.
Right, right. No, but I think it was important, like, that, you know, for the fact that you weren't, like, an outright nerd, like, really helped.
Yeah.
I think you had a dispassionate, like, kind of objective, like, view to what was going on. Because you were able to kind of step back and, like, your nerd feelings weren't like, oh, I love this. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, it's one of the many aspects that makes her such a fantastic editor of the book as well, is that, she's absolutely able to kind of, like, step back until we've reached a point where we can present the book to her. Like, you know, she does everything an editor traditionally does, like setting our deadlines and making sure that we're all staying on track. She checks in with the script before the art starts happening, but, you know, she doesn't really get super involved in it until all the line art is done and she can read through it as what it's going to be. And she's always able to kind of perfectly point out, you know, any opportunity to kick ass that's lacking.
She's
always able to point it out, like, very immediately because she hasn't been inside of it the whole time.
I do come to these, I come to it every time, like, I am one of the readers. I'm new to this. Every time, it's like I'm a babe in the woods. I just showed up and was like, what's this? but it helps because I don't always know what they're referencing. I haven't been, you know, drenched in the culture. So I think it also allows, it allows us to make sure that we are, that this is broad enough for anybody to step into and enjoy the story. We have a ton of people that pick up our books who've never read a comic book before. And I'm always like, this is a great place to start. Because I hadn't read one either till we made this. And man, it's turned me on, you know? So it's like, start here. And everyone who does, they're like, oh, I'm in, you know? So it's about when you find a team like this, when you can find a balance like this, it's hard to fail in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Right. So Lisa, so as the artist and, you know, you had the initial concept, was it, like, kind of difficult for you in the sense to, like, see things criticized and, you know, when it's being fleshed out, obviously things might have changed from your original vision, not necessarily in a bad way, but, like, you know, a lot of times creators, you know, they hold very tightly to, like, oh, this is my baby. So they don't want to see a lot of change. Was that a difficult transition for you?
It really wasn't. Like, I mean, I'll admit when we first talked about bringing a writer on board, I was like, oh, what if they don't get it? but once I met Kelly Sue, it was like, oh, this isn't going to be a problem at all. So, like, once she came on, I trusted everything implicitly. Like, I was like, I feel good about wherever this goes. And I very much couldn't be too married to any hard and fast storyline, I'll say. Like, because going in, I mean, part of the reason we needed a writer at all was because I didn't, like, really have any story structure in place. I had a general idea of how I wanted things to go, but I didn't like have any grasp of the details of how to get from point A to point B. And I didn't know how to make characters talk to each other. So I was very, very open to the process of making it real. Whatever that entailed, whatever changes that might have entailed. And I mean, like, you know, there have been a couple of times where we've disagreed on things. But we always talk it out to a point where it's like, we all come to a place where we can agree that, you know, this needs to change, or this thing that you really didn't want to change, you successfully argued to not have it changed. So, mm-hmm. you know, anything that's really, that we're willing to, you know, sacrifice over, we're able to do it. We trust each other enough that I always have faith that we all have the best interest of the story in mind. So, so yeah, I didn't have much struggle with letting other people have their say. It actually makes the whole thing so much stronger that it's not just my voice.
Yeah. Right. And us all being fairly mature people when we came about this, you know, coming together as kind of mature people helped, you know, it's not like we're 19 being like, I'm going to do this, you know, all of us being adults and having already gone through a lot of other iterations of life, you know, you know how to trust somebody, you know what that means, you know how to behave, you know how to articulate yourself in ways that aren't overly aggressive, I guess maybe, except for me at times. It's just because I'm dramatic. I've been challenged to the dramatic. But, you know, I think that's a huge part of it. And when we undertook this thing, it was kind of like, this is only going to work if we are coming at this from a very professional kind of objective angle. And all three of us have, you know, we're able to do that. It was important to us. And we were like, yeah, let's do it. You know, we're in it together. We either all win or we all lose. So why don't we just all win?
Definitely.
So Kelly Sue, as someone having a background in like mysticism and, you know, occult and that metaphysical realm, did you see this as kind of an opportunity to kind of express that side of yourself in the comic book and with Lisa's art? And how did that make you feel? How that, like, you know, what went through your mind when Lindley and Lisa brought this to you, this opportunity to you?
Oh, man. Well, firstly, I'll just say, yes, absolutely. That kind of side of me had also been, not latent, but it wasn't something I readily shared because at the time, nobody really... I didn't have my people yet. Nobody got it, you know? So it was kind of something that I was just doing for me. But then when I remember meeting up and really wanting to put my best foot forward on this. Like, I think I showed up in a blazer.
I was like, oh,
I brought like my notebook and I was ready to go. And I was like, this is how this is going to roll. And I want to, you know, I want to make a really great first impression. And then, they were explaining to me the story, and I was sitting there, and there was definitely a moment where I was like, is this real? You know, like, is this what I actually think it is? Because I had this, like, bubbling excitement, and I was just like, be cool, be cool, be cool. And then, you know, I was like, here's what I see us doing, and here's the structure for how we can plan out all of these deliverables of scripts and outlines and everything, right? And then I went home and I screamed in my pillow. And then Lisa later on sent character briefs and world descriptions. And I was sitting there, and it was really it was when the Harry Potter meets Blade Runner thing kind of came together, because I was like, this is totally Harry Potter meets Blade Runner number one. And just saw nothing but possibility for all of this kind of spiritual, mystical knowledge that I had accrued over so many years that I was really passionate about. So that was really, really exciting. It has informed the creative process really from the get-go. And luckily, I had just come from not just the writing class that I was in that was taught by a working professional who had spent time in writer's rooms for the last, I mean, he had been in the business for 25 years. And the one thing he hammered into all of us from the get-go is that you work as a team. You're never going to step into a writer's room and have it be all about you or your ideas. So you better get used to serving the story before serving yourself. Right. And that has been something that I've carried with me throughout this entire process and really approaching any project. So being able to just contribute what I can contribute to it and then, you know, work with Lisa and Lindley kind of in tandem to create what we have, you know, it. I think that the proof is in the pudding in terms of what ends up on the page in every issue.
Awesome.
And that
awesome.
Is kind of my feeling about it and my experience.
Well, it sounds like a great experience. And
definitely.
So the one thing I want to mention was your comic book is very, it definitely speaks to humanity. A wealth of diversity in it. And I just don't even want to call it diversity. It's just that it speaks to humanity, right? So anyone who picks this up can feel welcome in this universe because they see themselves represented. Was that a conscious choice from the start, or was that just something that, like, intuitively you were just like, hey, let's do that's this character fits this mold and that character fits that mold?
I would say that, like, I definitely kind of felt more the latter. I just kind of wanted to make sure that we had a rainbow. Like when Kelly Sue creates new characters, she will give me a reference sometimes as to like what she was thinking, like this character would look like. But every time it's like, well, every new character is an opportunity to reach someone else. Mm-hmm. To a new opportunity to have someone see themselves in the book. And of course, like story-wise, we want to make sure that we always say we want to treat all of our characters with the most respect from hero to villain and everyone in between. They're always operating at their highest selves, you know, their highest capabilities. And so we don't ever want any character to come off as stereotypical or cheap or anything like that. And as long as you're doing that, you know, we're able to connect, and it's thrilling to be able to do that. And I think the other two can speak even more to all of this as well. If you guys wanted to jump in, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
Sure. I think it's from the beginning, one of the cool things about the construct is that it's kind of post-racial, it's kind of post-gender. This world that we're in is kind of post all of that. So it allows, what I thought Paul was like kind of so freeing, and it is that it allows you to just not have to worry about that. Just people can be people. And so then you can just design great characters. And, you know, one of the things that is quickly noticeable in the book is the color in general. Like Lisa's color is incredible. The way she uses it to tell colors, I mean, to tell the story, the way that you know what's happening based on the color scheme. It's visually very beautiful. And it's nice that she can, the people that we put into things, the costumes they wear, the angles they take, the ways that they appear in the background behind them and all of that, it has this fluidity to it. Then it's like you can be free in here, free to just make great characters, you know, free to just, these people, they are not suffering from any of these problems. So we don't have to either. They're suffering from other problems, but they're not that one. And so it really kind of just set us free to be able to do that, to be able to have a really broad palette and to have a place where everyone can see themselves, because that's the point, because the real villain is the divisiveness.
Right.
That's the real villain. Yeah. It doesn't have anything to do with what your body looks like on the outside. It's what the people with power do to the people without it. Period.
Right. And I
All the other stuff is just bullshit, you know?
What I thought was most funny is, like, you know, to me, like, in my, in, like, you know, if you watch the news or anything like that, it's like racing class, racing class, racing class. Like,
that distracts
most people. And, like, you know, in reading Hex, like, race was eliminated, but there was, like, this class thing, right? So, because class is what is really the predominant factor in all of that, you know, race is kind of used as a baiter to distract even more.
Because
there's only one race, and it's the human race, right?
You know, exactly.
But the class thing was definitely evident, and I love how, and at the beginning of this interview, Lindley, you spoke to the corporatocracy of the society in Hex 11, which kind of mirrors what's going on in our country today. But it's just interesting to see how, you know, art emulates reality. So, Lisa, do you have, when you draw, like, because, like, things that you see around you, like, come into your mind and you're like, I want to draw this character, like, or is, like, do the characters speak to you, like, and you're like, I just want, like, you know, how do you come up with these drawings? Because they're very, I enjoy them very much. And yeah, like I said, it was just, everything seemed natural. There was, like, nothing forced in the book, and it just seemed like this Hex 11 is a great universe to live in.
Well, than, you know, thank you. I would say that I do kind of let them, like, let the characters kind of dictate how they're going to look. There's a character in Volume 2 named Euro, so you haven't met this character yet, but when I first had the initial light bulb idea that this character was going to exist, I had an idea of what they would look like based on the setting that I put them in. But when I actually developed the character with Kelly Sue, and Kelly Sue, like, made Euro real, she had put Euro in a different situation than I had initially thought, which was great. It was a way better situation. So then Euro's characteristics changed to fit where they were. As far as taking from life, I wouldn't call myself a fashion hound, but I am an intense window shopper. So I always like to draw the clothes. I got Euro's costume from, I think, like, I don't know, some random, like, holiday wear designer. So that's kind of how it happens. It's like the characters kind of, and their situation dictate to me what they're going to look like, which is why, because like you said, I don't want it to feel like I shoehorned in this character that looks this way just to meet a quota of some kind. I want them to I want them to be who they are.
Organic.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So I want to ask you, we do live in kind of a patriarchal dominated society, and, you know, the protagonist and most of the lead characters here that are utilizing magic and mysticism are women. Did you ladies research historic mystic women, voodoo women, magical women, to kind of see, like, you know, what your predecessors in the past who actually, you know, dealt in this realm may have done or gone through in their experiences?
I am going to
like
say
Joan of Arc, or like Joan of Arc or Madame Laveau, you know what I mean?
I think all of them were behind me as I maybe developed Eleanor, but I didn't do I will admit, I did not do focused research at the time. I just kind of, I think that I just kind of, I just kind of made her. But like, right. But like you're saying, it's like, you know, being women in this day and age, it's like we are the result of generations of women. I think that the creation of Eleanor was, all of that was behind me and behind her as well. So in that regard, yes.
But yeah, no, we tend to create what we, you know, your story is reflective of what you know, yeah. your experience, yeah. your perspective based on what your experience has been. And I think that's why you see a lot of women in these roles, because that's who we are, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not like we sit down to this and go, I'm a woman, what do I think about things? You know, yeah. we're just people over here living, but our experience, as with everyone, our experience is cultivated by gender norms and cultural norms mm-hmm. and historical norms and all these crazy things that go on. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. when you sit down to tell an authentic story, oftentimes the first story especially you're going to tell is yours. The story mm-hmm. of right. my experience, you know. And Lisa, I've been working on this for so long, and I don't think it's any, I don't think yeah. it's happenstance that Eleanor happens to, you know, look a lot like Lisa. Smart.
Artistic license.
Yeah, you know, and it's not like yeah. Lisa was like, I'm going to make a book about me. But it's like you're just writing what you know.
Yeah.
No, of course
yeah.
you do that.
Yeah.
But you're just, it's your truth, you know. And so the people around her were, you know, were women. The people who play strong roles in your life, you know, in a lot of cases are women. And so this is just us telling this story, and this is how yeah. it turned out, you know.
We honor
all the women in our past, you know, who got us to where we are, so that we can no longer be chattel and pretend at least like we're whole people.
Yeah,
we're still having right, these right. battles.
Yeah.
You know, like what's going on right now with the Supreme Court and all this crazy stuff, where we've still got men over there arguing about what we can do with our bodies.
Oh my gosh.
Got no consequence to any.
Lindley, don't get me started. Don't get me started.
I know, man. I just I'm not going to start either.
Abortion is not a form of birth control. Abortion is not.
No, out of here, man. And it's just it's all about control is what it is, you know. And so, you know, we're still over here fighting the fight, as all of us are who are not in positions of power, you know.
Absolutely.
We're going to change that, though, man.
So before I forget, like, yes, one of the things that spoke most to me at the beginning of Hex 11 is Booth and what's her name? Eleanor's teacher.
Vera.
Yeah, how they speak about how we're on the cusp of a new society and how, you know, we're here, things are changing. And I totally believe this is true. I think that if you just look at society, if you look at history, and if you, Kelly Sue may speak to that. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, intuitively, as mm-hmm. someone who relies on just non-physical things, existence, you know that
yeah.
things are moving in a change.
Change
is
absolutely.
So I yeah. think it's important that, as you know, what you're doing with Hex 11 is awesome. And I totally buy into what you're doing, and I'm so happy that you're out here doing it. And I think it's really important. Yeah. And I appreciate you for doing it, and I thank you. And
thank you. Thanks for noticing, and thanks for, you know, having your eyes open so you could, you know,
yeah.
see something great.
That old saying, right? If you find what you love to do and you do it, like, you'll never work a day in your life, right? So I think that's a little, yeah, I think it's not totally correct, that saying, because, you know, even though you find what you do and you love, you're still kind of working to make sure, you know, because a lot of people say, I've met a lot of artists at the cons and, you know, Artist Alley and a small press booth. And I'll say, oh, so this is great, you know, and they'll say, well, this is my part-time job. And then I go back. I say, no, no, no. That other job is your part-time job, and this is your real job.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what awards you to do this, right? So, but you have all been able to X out that other job and just do this. So you are a shining example to a lot of people, and I applaud you for that, definitely.
Well, thank you. Just, you know, in all full disclosure, Lisa does still do illustration work to pay bills.
Oh, well, she's an artist. Lisa's an artist. Like, they're never going to stop drawing,
yeah,
right? Like, so.
Exactly, exactly. And Kelly Sue, at least we, with this opportunity has, I mean, Lisa's always been illustrating, but this opportunity has certainly led for Kelly, you know, she was wanting to write and wanting to get paid to be a writer. And through this experience, she can do that now. You know, she does have a job at, you know, as a freelance writer, and she gets paid to do that. And that's huge. You know, she's not having to work as an admin and in an ad agency in a situation where she just is like, this is not feeding my soul at all.
Right, right. They say play is going to play, but art is going to art, right? So, I mean, it's
all good. Art
is going to art.
I love it.
Art is art. We got to put that on a shirt, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to stop doing your passion and what you love. I mean, you know, I mean, Kelly, if that's your thing, you know, and I'm sure you, like, your art is seeing something, the potential in it, and like forming it into something. Like, you know, manifesting that potential, right? So
definitely.
As Hex grows, I'm sure, like, that's what I want to ask. What's next for Hex? Like, do you guys see this going somewhere else? Because I can see Lindley is in person, so I can see you expanding Hex or bringing other things in. Like, you know, what's next?
Yeah, for sure. Well, in the short term, we've got Divorce the Love Story, which is our next. It's going to be a standalone graphic novel, but it's going to be our next title. It's written by Kelly Sue. It's a kind of a serial memoir of her own personal experience that Lisa is going to illustrate, and that should be out by the end of the year. And then, of course, we're working on volume 3 of Hex 11, so issue 13 will be out here shortly. We have some other things in the works that we can't quite talk about yet, but we are, you know, we're definitely, we've kind of hit a plateau here of awareness. We've been doing this now for 4 years. And, oh my God, is that LA?
Wait, wait, you guys are in LA? Is that LA or New York? Which one is that? Like, in the
that
background.
Must be LA.
We're all here in LA.
It's LA. That's got to be Kelly, too.
Yeah. Oh, man. So we do have, we started to get a lot of attention from other mediums. So we'll see what's going to come of that.
We may see a Hex 11 Cartoon Network, Netflix, movie or anime.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it should be great. We'd definitely be open to it. You know, these are things that we never set out to be like, this is our plan. But we set out to do what we continue to strive to do is to just make the best. Just make the best story we can make, to make the best book we can make, and to stay connected to our fans and to do right by them because they have been so, so good to us. And we're just, you know, our plan is to always just stick with that. But if people want to show up and they've got ideas and that, and we can negotiate something there that works for, you know, that's a win-win all around, then we're going to do that because what we want ultimately is to reach as many people as we can. And if we can get this into a visual, you know, another kind of visual medium that's got a larger audience, well, we're gonna find a way to do that, you know. So we're definitely a proactive situation over here, that's for sure.
Awesome.
And so we're not going anywhere for a while. And then we've got a couple scripts that are in the works that are gonna be they're different writers, and they will be different artists. And you know, ultimately, our goal here is to be publishing company, which we are, but to actually be able to publish other people's stories, you know, people who traditionally can't find a place to get it done, that we're going to help them do that. That's really what our passion is here. And Hex 11 is hopefully is kind of like our way to be able to do that. If we can really make some money or, you know, get enough support or influence or, you know, all of those things that you need to be able to, really crank up the engine, then we can really start pumping out great work. And that's our ultimate goal.
Awesome. So just two more questions before we go is, Hex 11 is steeped in magic and mysticism and science and technology. I just want to big up, you guys familiar with Solina, Dana Diaz, like, you know, female magicians, are you aware of them? How does that?
I'm not, but
how
I want to be.
About
I know, me either. Like, wait, who? Let me write this down. Who
I know, I'm like, I'm going to take this note right now. Who?
Yeah. Like, Solina, Dana Diaz, Anna de Guzman, Billy Kidd. Those are some female magicians that are, because I'm on a board of the Society of American Magicians, so I am
awesome.
As well as mysticism. So I always enjoy seeing the women magicians come out and do their thing. There are a lot of women magicians out there, and you know, if you're reading Hex and you're like, wow, this is cool, just a little just a little side note. Maybe next time you guys are at a con, like, get one of these ladies close up magic and bring them to your table. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Well, we've been a few times to the what's the place, Lisa?
The Magic Castle.
Oh. Magic Castle.
Yeah. That is a very historic place. Yes. That is a very historic place.
It's coolest.
Yes.
Yeah, it's so rad.
But I have never, the two times I've been there, I've never seen a female magician. Have you?
I know.
Any of you?
No, I haven't either.
I haven't either. I would very much like to see that change.
While, but yeah, I won't say that they don't have any. Haven't seen a minute.
Yeah, that's something that needs to change.
We should do an event there. Sometime we should try to figure something out where we could maybe get with these women magicians and do something there.
Oh man, idea!
Just launch something. So cool.
Well, Lindley, I will send you a link of the top female magicians. Definitely. But look
at that's awesome.
The Magic Castle could definitely use a feminine touch, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And probably somebody to tidy it up a little bit.
Well, it is really old.
It's very old. It's so cool, man. We've had incredible experiences there.
Yeah.
I totally spaced on my second question, but I want to very much thank you for being here and spending
thank
this hour
with
Afronauts Radio. And so can you tell us where we could, obviously we could go to Comixcology, we could go to the, is it the Hex 11 website? It's
hexcomics.com.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's comics. Yep.
Yes, comix, comics with an x.com. Yep.
Yep.
You can always download issue 1 for free, so you can see if you like what we're coming with, and then we ship all over the world. So if you want to buy hard copies, you can do that, and then we'll ship them to you. And that's, if it's in the States, it's not very pricey at all for shipping. And you can also go to Comixology if you want digital downloads of all the individual issues or both of the volumes. And you can also download digital copies from our website. So that's hexcomics.com. Also has lots of cool merch, and Lisa designs really great stuff, t-shirts and cool enamel pins. And we've got magic kits, and we always are coming up with some new stuff. So it's always fun to go back and check to see what new things we're making.
Hey, look at that. You have magic kits. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
That you can always find us at hexcomics.com. And then, of course, if
and
you're
I
looking
see you will be at LA Comic Con.
We will.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
End of October, last weekend of October, we will be there.
It's our anniversary show.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Excellent. Mm-hmm. 4 years, right? 4 years?
Four years.
It's our hometown show, and it's where we debuted issue 1 in 2014, with having no idea at all what was going to happen. And then we sold out of all of our books before noon on Sunday. And we were like, okay, well, I guess this is going to work out.
Better get to
we should get to work on this whole thing.
That is a great show. I actually haven't been in like 2 years because we usually have something else that comes up around then. But yeah, that's a great show, LA Comic Con. And it being around Halloween, is a great time for you guys to spotlight your stuff. So.
Very good synergy.
Yeah, totally. So are you here in L.A.?
I'm in the Bay. I'm in the East Bay, as a matter of fact. Pleasant Hill. Oakland area. So
That's where I was for a little while there.
I heard that. Yeah. I love the area.
Make sure to let us know.
Yeah. I'm a New York transplant. I love California. I will never go back to the East Coast now. But,
heard.
Yeah. I know, right? Completely heard.
I mean, the weather is just too beautiful.
Well, don't be a stranger.
Definitely.
Especially down here, man. Holy moly, it's so nice. 72 and 70.
Yes, it is. And so, like I said, it's been a pleasure talking with you all. And please stay in touch. And please, when your next volume comes out, please come back to the show. If you have any other projects, we would love to have you back on. And I hope to see you at a con real soon. And I will. Lindley, I will send you that list of female magicians, and I look forward to staying in touch with you all.
Please do. Thank you again.
Thanks so much for having us.
No problem. Thank you. You guys, you ladies, have a great night.
You too, man.
You too, man.
Bye.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.